You're listening to the Laugh Factory Podcast Network. For more shows, visit the podcast page at laughfactory.com.
It's the After Laugh, After Laugh. Welcome to the After Laugh, After Laugh, After Laugh. After Laugh, man. Go ahead, pull up a chair.
Hey. In LA, haven't been here for a while. And I want to share this. On the flight here, landing LAX, the pilot comes on. First of all, we're about to land. All of a sudden, the plane goes, zzz, it like accelerates and goes up. The only time that happened to me before when I was in Iraq in a cargo plane evading enemy fire or the potential of enemy fire. So they're doing like evasive maneuvers. So it's a scary feeling. Like, why the fuck is this plane in the air right outside of LAX? He circled around. He came back. He goes, and the pilot, you know, pilots usually have that really deep, like, hey, guys, I'm the pilot. But he had like a lisp. And there's something like, you don't want your pilot to have a lisp. No. I don't know why. I know it's a stupid thing, but you want your pilot to have that like super macho, like, I got everything's under control.
There's only two requirements that a pilot has. Be good at flying the plane, mm-hmm, and be good at making us know you're good at flying the plane.
So this is what the pilot does. He goes, hey guys, I just want to say we have a broken wing flap.
Oh my God.
That's the first thing he says, and I go, my first thought is, I'm like, why are you telling us this?
Land the fucking plane. You're in the air and he tells you this.
In the air. Oh my God. He goes, guys, we have a broken wing flap. Shall we, and he was trying to do that like calming thing. He goes, we did some troubleshooting and we think you got it worked out. Basically, he was like, so we're just going to go for it.
Oh my God.
And he said, there's going to be fire trucks on the runway. Now, I've had one emergency landing before.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was they thought the wheel hub was on fire, and I thought, and that was like the first, because I remember the flight attendant. I saw the flight attendant run down. We see a flight attendant run down. I was like, "What the fuck is happening?" And then I saw her talk to another flight attendant, and then she put her hand over her mouth, like, and I was like, "Holy fuck!" And then we had to like strap. We didn't do the thing where you tuck your head between your knees.
Oh man!
Because we were still in the air, but it turns out there wasn't a fire. It indicated there was a fire digitally, so they thought there was. Meanwhile, the guy next to me was doing Sudoku the whole time.
Oh, my God.
Sudoku the whole time.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I said to him, I go, and I was fucking shitting myself. So I said to him, you weren't worried? He goes, hey, I had a heart attack last year, and every day is an extra day for me.
Wow.
And I was like, man, you're my fucking hero, dude. So anyway,
I would have been passed the fuck out on the tray table in front of me. Never would have even known that any of it happened.
Man, I was all of a sudden I rediscovered my relationship with God.
Wow.
And we landed. It was fine. It wasn't even that bad a landing. But they had to open up when we were really high, they had to open up the landing gear high. So the plane was wobbly as shit. Anyway, so today he said that. And when we landed really fucking hard.
Oof.
Like, it was like, bam. It wasn't like the smooth back wheels first. It was a smash. And the flight attendant comes up, thank you for choosing Delta, guys. It was fucking...
Wow.
And the fire truck. Anyway.
Thank you for choosing Delta.
But my point is, like, just don't tell me. Like, what am I supposed to do about that? Oh, wait. The flap... Let me take care of it. Open up that fucking window there. I'm going to go out there. Take care of the monster on the wing. It was just like, pilots, don't tell us what's happening. Just land the plane or don't. I would rather die just suddenly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's also some, like, a broken wing flap is so vague to someone who doesn't know what that means. That could mean we're all going to die.
Yeah.
All the way to it's going to be a slightly rough landing. Everything's fine.
Yeah. He said, I think everything's going to be fine.
I think everything's fine. Oh my
but
God.
We're just going to go for it, guys.
We're just going to go for it, guys.
I didn't say that, but that's what
that's
it felt
so
like.
Funny.
And, man, it was...
So, we'll see.
We'll see. Hey. My cousin got bit by a gay guy. We'll see.
We'll see. Oh, so funny.
Anyway, so shout out to Theo Vaughn. So anyway, that was... I just got back into L.A., and I see my good friend Tommy, and...
Hey.
We're going to do a little follow-up, because last time we talked, Tommy had his friend... from home that he went to go visit. I know some people are waiting on bated breath, and we know what bated breath smells like. So we got to finish the story. So
Do we?
And we were going back
like Orbit gum.
We were going back and forth on how to handle the situation, because I will say this in my experience of I mean, I haven't done this in fucking eons, but flying a woman in, or a woman that you haven't been romantic with, or flying to a woman's place that you haven't been romantic with, it's always a weird feeling, because it's very rare for a good woman to be like, all right, let's do it. Let's get it out of the way. Let's make it happen. It's always there's a subtle dance, particularly with someone that you've been friends with for a long time. So let's walk through the first night. How went it? So you show up, and when you first saw each other, like, did you get a sense the first time you saw her, like, okay, we're homies, this is friendship, or did you feel like, was it awkward from the jump?
I don't,
come on, Tommy.
I don't know how much detail I want to go into.
But the point is, you did have a great night the first night.
Right,
You went out.
Well,
because everything's open in Texas, right?
I will say Texas is very open. Nobody's wearing masks. The barbecue is as good as they say. She's also an incredible cook, though.
Oh, did she cook for you?
She cooked for me.
Whoa.
It was like, it's funny because she cooked me like an authentic Indian dish.
Wow.
She's not Indian, but
yeah.
She was good friends with some Indian people, and they taught her this like old recipe.
Oh, wow.
And it was, like, she used this very strange-tasting fish paste in it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, called, like, squid paste or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a very strange, pungent odor. And yeah. If you just would smell that, you'd be like, this is probably not great.
Something bad.
But you mix it in with all the other spices and stuff, and it becomes this fantastic... It's like the weirdness of that odor mixed with this other thing, you know, like real cooking shit.
Yeah. Which also brings up another issue, because this is why years ago I was always like, I'm never going to have a dinner date with a girl ever until we're in the relationship and things are solid. Because, and now particularly Indian food, right? That's not the best for the belly.
Well, my friend Chris is obsessed with hot, spicy. She's mm-hmm. always pushing it to the limit.
Yeah.
Like, even the first night we went to this bar and we got the habanero mac and cheese. And it's like, whatever I think is as spicy as I should go, she's always like, max it out.
Yeah.
Max it out. And I... and she'll just...
Yeah, some people... Apparently, there's a genetic thing where they're missing a receptor... Where they can't feel the... Like, I dated a girl one time who used to eat ghost peppers raw.
Yeah. That's the type of person she is. And it's like, I remember she used to be sensitive to spicy food when we were young.
Uh-huh.
And then she just decided that she would become a master of it.
You mean the boss of mace pepper?
As like a challenge. So then she would always just try and eat as much spicy food as possible. And by the end, she was incredibly tolerant.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, she would... constantly, almost as a joke, try and get me to eat these spicy peppers she had. I would just be in complete pain half the time.
I have the intestinal fortitude of like a 5-year-old with lupus. So
yeah.
I just, even if I have to eat before, like I don't eat before shows.
Yeah.
Because if I eat anything before a show, I'm burping up there. I'm farting on stage.
Oh, God.
I'm doing it's fucking up my timing.
Yeah.
Sometimes you burp on stage, it's funny. For some reason,
right.
Burp you. Hey, that's not the joke, but I just had a burp. So I don't... But on a date, like, that's not going to be a good...
No,
like,
no.
Romantically, I'm out. I'm
there
out.
Are foods you do not eat on dates.
I think... I mean, Maurizio Vance, friend of the pot, yes. But he has a very funny bit about going... The girl wants to take Indian food. He goes, I don't want Indian food. So what? I go, because I don't like what it does to my asshole. And she's like, come on, just try it. He goes, well, why don't we have anal sex? And she goes, I don't want to do that. Why not? Because
I don't like it to
tear my
asshole.
Well, that's why I don't eat Indian food. That's I fucked up the joke, but that's the idea.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I love Indian food, yeah. But it's a good joke.
So you stayed inside the first night. And you cooked your dinner. You went out afterwards to a bar and hung out. And you had old friends that you met up with.
Yeah, I mean, it was mostly like, we're old friends, and I hadn't visited her in Texas yet. We always see each other. We FaceTime sometimes, and mm-hmm. I always see her when I go home. But it had been a while because of the pandemic.
And now both of you are single. Has a slightly different energy there.
Right.
That you can't really talk about. And you're a nice guy, so you're not going to ever push anything.
Right. Well, we hadn't even really considered anything like that.
Yeah.
For some time. Or like, I don't even know if we had. It's something that like, we're just friends, and I was happy being friends. And I think maybe it crossed my mind for every once in a while.
Sure.
Because she's a beautiful person. But
yeah. So the first night, and so you're sleeping on the couch.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you try to do the play like, hey, can we sleep in the same bed and I'll be a gentleman?
No.
No. You slept on the couch. Everything's cool. And you were there for two nights, right?
Three nights.
So you're having a good time. You guys are friends. Everything's good. And, you know, it's like you're hanging out with a friend, right?
Right. I don't know how much detail I want to go into it.
That's all I'm saying. You guys hung out. You were buddies. You were sleeping on the couch.
Right.
And it was all friendly. There's like underpinnings of like some sort of romantic thing that isn't being pursued, but it's there. And that's kind of nice to have that sort of feeling, right?
It is.
So what happened after that, Tommy? So this is going to be, I mean, I don't know how I describe it, but I just heard it. So tell me what happened when you got home.
Well, so we had a magical weekend. It was very fun. It was kind of like, I don't know. I got to see a little sneak peek into the new life she had created in Texas. And I got to meet all of her new friends. And
family, too?
No, not family out there.
Yeah.
So she's in grad school.
Yeah.
At a Texas Tech.
Yeah.
And
but her life was full, and she had friends.
Her life was full, and she had a lot of really exciting scientific things. She had just gotten funding for this project she was going to do in like microbiology.
Did she go into detail what it was?
She did. I don't remember all the details. It's one of those things where it's like, it's scientific detail that I don't understand enough.
But you could tell that she was excited.
I could tell that she was excited, and it sounded like she was really into things that were going to help the world. You know what I mean? She always was obsessed with making the world a better place. And I remember on the first night, we were eating barbecue, and I was kind of like being a little bit pessimistic. And
as is your wont.
As is I am sometimes to do. I'm an optimistic person.
Yeah, I think you are.
But I think I had just been kind of overwhelmed by all the pandemic stuff, and we used to always talk about climate change ever since we were young, because you know we're growing up in North Carolina.
Even when you're young.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're in the science.
It wasn't long ago. Yeah.
Yeah, we were like, climate change was in the news ever since we were kids.
Yeah.
And obviously we're in a place where not everybody believes in that stuff, but we always did, and especially when she started going to school for science, I would kind of ask her questions to see, like, she was my insider opinion on what the scientific community thought. And I remember sometimes she'd be like, yeah, it's not looking good. It's more or less hopeless to an extent. But even in the face of that, she was always an optimist. She was like, but there's still things we can do. There's no reason to give up hope. And I remember I was kind of like saying how I don't think anything's going to change. I think the rich people in this country, in this world, they don't give a fuck how many people are going to die. Mm-hmm. They are going to build their own electronically regulated habitats.
Uh-huh.
It's like Elysium. You know what I mean?
Like biodome.
They're going to build their little biodome. They're going to have their little farm. They're going to have their pools and their air conditioning, and the rest of the world is just going to burn up and die. I kind of like said some very negative shit like that.
Yeah.
And she was like, the fuck is wrong with you? Get your fucking shit together, man.
I mean, I do think that is a very, as much as I'm all for people who want to work on climate change, the whole like Nostradamus soothsaying like the world's going to die in 8 years and fucking like, even if it's like back to the pilot, even if the world's going to explode or whatever the fuck it is in 8 years, like just tell me it's not.
Yes.
You know what I mean? What can I do?
What's
recycle more?
have a responsibility to at least try. And
we can all get together and move the needle like a percentage of a millimeter.
Right. So she kind of set me straight. People. She was like, "You're being a fucking loser."
Yeah.
Okay. You know. Yeah. I mean, what's the point? What's the point in sticking around if you're not even going to try and be hopeful that something good can happen?
Yeah.
I was like, that's an excellent point.
Yeah. Is her work, was it involved in helping climate change?
Not climate change, no. She did, like, biological stuff. She did a lot of stuff with endophytes and...
Oh, endophytes,
she's
of course.
A lot of stuff with plants.
Okay.
And, like, using the genetics of plants to create... stuff. It was all
okay.
Like,
so she wasn't torturing beagle puppies.
No, hurting animals. But anyways, so
you get home and
I get
when,
home.
When you get home, you're thinking like, you know, we're still homies. Maybe down the line there could be something romantic. But
right.
Whatever the case is, you guys are young. The future is wide open. Who knows?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you
get home and you're home for how long?
I'm home for about 2 weeks, and then I get a call from one of my best friends from childhood. We were all kind of in a little tight-knit unit uh-huh. growing up. Mm-hmm. And it was early in the morning. He was like, "Are you awake? Are you ready to hear this shit?" And I was like, "What's going on?" He said that she died. So
yeah.
I've been kind of dealing with that.
So when he first... said that,
yeah.
Do you? I mean, does it must take a while to even register? Like, wait, are we talking about the same person? Like, what? You, like, hot boy, hot, blah, 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 like, does not compute.
Yeah,
because you had no indication that she was even in a space.
No,
nothing about her seemed unhealthy. Seemed like she was in.
No, she was doing great.
Yeah.
If anything, I feel like she had gone through a lot of stuff in her life, like growing up. Dealing with the pressure of school, and she also has ADD, and I think she had a tough time with her family, and her grandparents were really important to her, and then they died at one point, and then she got to college, and something else crazy happened to her. She witnessed someone commit suicide.
Holy
by jumping
shit.
Off of the science building.
Good God.
Because it was like a high-pressure environment.
Good Lord.
And so she saw that, and that kind of gave her... She had to go to therapy.
She was, like, on the ground floor, and she saw a body land?
Jump from the roof.
Holy sh... And she knew the person, too?
I don't think she knew them, but it was
oh,
in her
God.
Department. So...
God.
It's pretty traumatic.
Yeah.
And,
it's very rare for people to see someone actually die.
Yes.
I think most people go through their lives without seeing someone actually die.
Yeah.
I remember I held my cat when my cat died, and that fucked me up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I can't even imagine like that. I mean, you know, obviously I was in New York during 9/11, but like I didn't see like firsthand. I had a lot of friends who saw bodies fall, but
yeah.
Like not. Yeah, that's very traumatizing. So wow, amazing. And she.
But it seemed like she was about to graduate, about to get her PhD. She had some really good friends. And she seemed happier than she'd ever been. She had her own place.
Yeah.
And she had kind of figured out what made her happy and what she didn't want.
Yeah.
And it was like we were meeting each other again as fully formed human beings.
Well, at least one of you was.
Right. Well, I have a lot of work to do.
But yeah. So, and by the way, it's always amazing to find people who are self-fulfilled and happy and not under the guise of like, am I going to make it or I've made it or,
right.
You know, this weird fucking hamster wheel that we're on in the business where everyone we know is like either they're on it. Because I feel like in the business, it's all about like, and I talk about those. I just had a podcast with my buddy Matthew Del Negro because we're shooting City on the Hill together. And like, we did an awful play together off Broadway that I got fired from. And then... After that play, I found out I had a daughter. And after that play, his career just fucking blew up. I mean, he just like great guy, family guy. Now he's a regular on City on the Hill, and we're working together for the first time since his play. And but even then, he's just like, you know, he looks at his career, and you can't help but sort of, as evolved as you are, as much as you love your children and your wife and your family and your life, you always like, man, I got to get to this next level. There's, you never really fully land, because he looks at his best friend Chris Messina, who's fucking a big star. And Chris Messina looks at fucking like Sam Rockwell and goes, "Man, I want to be Rockwell." And Rockwell looks at fucking whoever, you know, and says, "I want to be that." So I feel like that's part of the nature of our business. And there are people who in this world who don't have that. Their work is as satisfying. Their work is their landing point. You know what I mean?
Now, I wouldn't look to over-romanticize it. I mean, I think science is hard work, right?
Yeah.
Getting your PhD is insanely stressful and hard work. And the thing with science is it's like, no matter how good you're doing, you're always having to look for funding. You're always to like... And you like you have funding on this one project, but when that runs out, you're like, I don't even know. Like,
yeah,
I think people have this perception of, oh, the science is like the most stable.
Yeah,
you go work in the lab and everyone's
9 to 5.
Just, of course, it's science is important, and so everyone in the lab is well paid and everyone's happy. But the reality of it, from speaking to a bunch of them, is like, oh, they're stressed as fuck all the time. They're worried about money. They're worried about. Is this hypothesis I have even going to make something that will be profitable? And here is the biggest thing that worries them all. Do I use my scientific gifts to try and invent something for the betterment of mankind with the risk that I will not make any money and flop out? Or do I go work for one of these fucking corporations, do some shit that I'm not that proud of, and end up very wealthy?
Yeah.
And I think, I mean...
Which is true, I think, for everything, right?
Everything. Like, in the arts, we're constantly faced with that.
Absolutely.
Integrity over...
Commercialism,
right? Do you sell out? Scientists have to worry about selling out all the time, all the same time. So there's a lot of crossover in the way that we struggle and see the world, just funny enough.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. So, like Dr. Fauci has his storied career, and he's still like, hey, man, I got to lie to the public and kill some puppies to make some money. So, man, well, that's fucking... So, and this prompted a change for you, huh, Tommy? Because, you know, there's a lot of articles out right now that the pandemic has made people reassess their life, which is why... What do they call it? Whatever, the great fucking retirement, or there's some phrase where all these people are just quitting all their jobs because you're like, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
And I think there is some nobility in that. And I also think there's a little bit of entitlement and laziness. And it's a hard line, because part of it is also like, if the government's going to pay you to sit around, like,
I don't think the government's paying people anymore, are they?
I think, I don't know. I mean, unemployment's still around.
Thank God. Unemployment exists, but you don't get it if you quit your job.
That's true. but I do think that there is something to the idea of people who go, wow, the world is fucked up. I have no idea if there's going to be a tomorrow or how long tomorrow is going to last. And I don't want to spend my life, look back when I'm 50 and say, wow, I flipped burgers for 20 fucking years. Or I was in the service industry. So like, apparently the service industry is like, impossible to hire people right now.
I think it's good. I think the service industry has been mistreating their employees for 50 fucking years.
Yeah.
And voila.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Love how it didn't trickle down to comics at all. It's not like comics are getting paid more or anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but comics, at the end of the day, we get treated like ass, and there's no real excuse for how we're being treated, but at the end of the day, we love what we do.
Yeah. That's true.
We would do it for no money, and we fucking do.
And we do. Yeah, we often do.
No one would wait tables for no money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm always in a situation where people go, hey, here's a gig, and then friends are like, what are you doing? Don't do that gig for that money. You're worth more than that. I'm like, I'm just going to fucking do it.
Yeah.
I don't want to put the screws in. I just want to fucking work. You know what I mean? So what happened? So this news happened. Obviously devastating news. One of your closest friends. And, like, what were your thoughts after that? Because then you put in your notice, right?
Well, yeah. I decided to quit my job. I think that's a separate thing.
It wasn't connected.
It wasn't necessarily directly connected, but I was kind of like, I'm trying to move up. I'm trying to try and be better and do more. I don't know. It makes me really sad because, I don't know, it's like even when I left, we were all talking about the things we were going to do.
Yeah.
And how excited we were for the next chapter of our lives. And, you know, she was rooting for me. She was one of the people that I always knew kind of had my back and would watch or listen to anything that I made.
Yeah, even if
it was silly. Like, even like my dumb, I don't mean to call it dumb, but it's like, you know, it's silly. My comedy album, my little
rap album.
At the end of the day, like, we got a bunch of plays on a couple songs, but I look at the analytics of people who listened all the way through, like all the way through every single track to the end, and it wasn't that many.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was nice to look at the analytics and look at the little cities. And I see Lubbock, Texas on there, and I know exactly who it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to miss that. And I'm gonna try and be successful and stuff, but it's like, it makes me sad to think that she won't be around to see what happens. Unless I live a tragic and terrible life, in which case, thank God.
But I mean, to that end...
You know what I mean.
I mean, do you think that it's a motivating factor for you to be like, hey, man, I kind of owe it to her.
Right. That's what I said when I left. Is I was like, I'm going to really start hustling and do some time. She was like, all right, I'm going to hold you to that.
Wow. Wow. Well, she's still holding to you right now.
Yeah.
And then you had a Zoom camera vigil.
And then I did a couple Zoom calls.
Did you talk during the vigil or anything?
The vigil made me a little bit sad because it was just for the people in Texas.
Yeah.
And I didn't, you know what I mean?
Like, so her family wasn't on it?
Her parents were there. They flew out. And there was a whole bunch of people who I had met. It was very funny because I met these people and they were such sweet folks. We played drinking games and I know that there's some like things on her phone that are like precious memories to me, like photos and videos that she took that I can never get now.
Yeah.
And it really breaks my heart, but
I mean, maybe you can. Maybe there's a way to get that.
Maybe we can. I don't know. I don't know what the deal with that is. It's like, I'm sure it's like password protected, right?
Yeah.
So I don't even know how you would. And I don't even know how I would go about asking for something like that. Like,
yeah.
I still have a bunch of photos from when we were kids and college and the photos we took when we were there. So, but I also don't take that many photos. It's not, I like to just be in the moment. But then when something like this happens, you're like, I should have taken more.
Yeah.
What was I thinking? But one of those things. Anyways, I lost my train of thought. We did some Zoom meetings with like my hometown friends and it was really nice to catch up with some old people. And, you know, you're reminded of all the people in your life that you take for granted. And
oh, for sure. Particularly from your past, there's a lot of people from your childhood that you just kind of, I guess you assume they're always going to be there. And then 10 years pass, you haven't talked to them. You're like, oh, fuck, how did that happen?
How did that happen? And it's funny. Like, you get older and the stuff you have in common to talk about is... It gets less.
Less and less.
And it makes me sad. It ends up usually just being about, like, what are you doing for work?
Uh-huh.
Did you see the sports game?
Yeah.
How's the girlfriend? You know, the important stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But the day-to-day stuff is never as... it's never as rich as when you're kids and you're really in that school. Like, in school, you're existing in such a... similar ecosystem and every little thing that happens is interesting and important to both of you. But nowadays it's like, that's a relationship I have with my comedy friends, right? Like if something gossipy happens or funny or someone does something crazy, like it's more present.
Yeah.
Right. Anyways, just part of getting older, I guess.
Yeah. And so, now, your ex-girlfriend that you're not allowed to talk about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, can we talk about that situation? No, you want to talk about it.
I don't know.
Are you still talking to her, your ex?
No.
It's weird that when you're with exes that you have a connection with, and you always say, like, hey, no matter what, we're going to be friends.
Right.
And you think that. There are certain people who think we're going to be friends for fucking ever.
Yes.
And the truth is, it's very rare to be friends forever with an ex.
It's just hard.
Yeah. And I think that's mostly involved with ego. I mean, you know, I had a change in my life where I used to be scorched earth with people. If I had a breakup and things started getting nasty, I was like, I'm just going to fucking, like, bring all the TNT I have to this fucking bridge and blow it up.
Yeah.
And now I'm at a point where I'm just like, man, it's never worth it. It's never, because most of the time when you're, I really feel like whenever you're fighting, you're in the wrong.
Yeah.
You're in the wrong when you're fighting. When you raise your voice, you're in the wrong. When you're mad, when you're angry, when you're yelling, whatever the fuck it is, you're in the wrong.
Yeah.
No matter how justified you feel at the time. And if you can, like, have that in the back of your head, like, I'm never right when I'm losing my temper. It's a good reminder to remember that, because I've had so many, God, I mean, even when I would go on dates and things didn't work out well, or they rejected me, and I would let my ego get involved. I'd be like, well, you know what? It's like, fucking, I wasn't into you either. It's like, hey, just be, hey, you know, it's fun hanging out. Take care, or whatever. Just don't even push it.
I think this past relationship I was in, I was like, there was a lot of things that where I felt disrespected or hurt my feelings, or it just felt unfair, and there was a resentment that had built up after a while, and it's so hard in those moments not to just be like, especially as comedians, it's like, I was thinking of great lines. I was like, this is a devastating line.
Yeah.
If this was a roast battle, if this was a joust, a fight to the death, I could win.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I could destroy this person.
Yeah.
But it's not about that. And doing that, it only makes you feel... It makes you feel good for a second. It's like a drug. For a split second as it leaves your mouth. And then immediately it's awful.
Yeah.
For both of you. And then... And here's the other thing is, it's like... I feel like I was so good about keeping my cool at all times and not saying things to hurt her feelings. But a few times I got so frustrated, she was pushing my buttons, I said hurtful shit. To this day, she remembers that.
Yeah.
And she'll bring it up to me.
Oh, for sure.
Because you know how to cut deep doesn't mean you should. It's like...
You should never.
It's like, because great power, great responsibility, you know what I mean?
And there's never... And that's not what you remember at the end, you know, the things that you said. I mean, most of the fights I had, breakups, like, I don't remember what the fights were about. I don't remember the shitty things I said. They remember.
Yeah.
But I don't remember. And it's just, I just, even, you know, it applies online too. Like, I posted something on, like, Rogan posted a quote on his Instagram. And the quote was, the forest... I'm going to fuck it up. But it was like, the forest kept, you know, I'm going to read it so I don't butcher it too much. But it's basically like a sort of cloaked, shit, I got to get out of this, political quote about what's happening right now in America.
Okay.
And, you know, everyone knows that Joe Rogan, like, he is, I mean, like he said, he's a registered Democrat, but he kind of, he finds himself more aligned with a lot of the right wing folks.
He's a centrist.
Because it's almost like, to be centrist, you almost have to be more aligned with a lot of right wing thinking right now. Unfortunately,
at this point, it does kind of seem that way.
So the quote is: the forest was shrinking, but the trees kept voting for the axe. For the axe was clever and convinced the trees that because his handle was made of wood, he was one of them. Turkish proverb. So
I mean, I tend to agree with that.
So and. This came right on the heels of the Chappelle controversy, which we can talk about. And you know, a thing like that, though,
everyone is going to interpret it from their own point of view.
So that's the thing.
Yeah.
So, like, Donald Trump Jr. chimes in, like, I don't know, he says, like, hell yeah, or some bullshit. Like, he goes, yes, and he puts, like, fire emoji there, right?
Oh, my God.
And it has, like, 2,000 likes. So I'm sure Joe Rogan wasn't trying to cater to Donald Trump Jr. at all. He's never had him on this podcast. I don't think he ever would.
Never would.
But so Donald Trump Jr. think this is about Biden, obviously. So I said, the Democrats are going to think this is about Trump. The Republicans are going to think it's about Biden. But we comics really know that this is about Hannah Gadsby.
Okay.
Right? And, you know, got some likes. I'm just trying to get some fucking seal out. And people, whatever, may come, oh, great comment, fine, whatever. And then someone wrote a fucking comment, said, you know, the funniest thing you've ever done was say that you're a comedian. Right? Yeah. Some fucking, I don't know who the fuck it was.
Okay.
And I was like, I want to look at this person.
Yeah.
And just fucking rip them.
Yes.
And so I think I wrote like, oh, come on, it was hilarious when it came on your mom's face or something like that. I was going to write, and I was just like, fuck it. So I just blocked his comment.
Yeah.
And fucking, you know, what are you going to do?
Like, wow.
What good would come out of wisdom? And like, as I was writing the comment, it felt good to be like, man, I'm snarky. And then I was like, why are you doing that, you dummy? What are you going to get? This person's going to be like, oh, he got me with that zinger. No, it's going to start a whole fucking thread.
Yeah.
It's going to take up my fucking time.
Yeah.
And I got to go after some fucking punk ass Gen Z kid.
No.
Who feels whatever it is. And it just, there's never, it's the same way I feel about when I'm on stage and they're like, I did shows in New York this week at The Stand. And I had two really great shows there. I was feeling myself. And then I did a show in the upstairs room at The Stand, which is more of like a dinner combination room, which is always a little bit weird because the server's coming in, taking orders, they're getting pizza, people are eating, they're on their phones, they're not taking the phones there. So there's a group of like five girls in their 20s on their phone, just screaming out constantly, it's my birthday. And I'm like, and as I'm going, they keep interrupting my jokes. I'm like, what do you guys want to talk about? She's like, masturbation. Using cucumbers. And I'm like, yeah, if you put a cucumber in your vagina, it'd come out a pickle, which is just a stupid joke.
That's hilarious. That's very silly.
But then there's a part of me that's like,
I love that because I don't even know what the fuck that means. And it's funny. It's just funny. You got an acidic pussy.
It's not even that mean. But then, and there's a part of me that's like, just fucking
mean.
Just rip on this girl. But then I go, why? So
did
I just suffered.
The pickle line?
Yeah, I said the pickle
line.
That's
so funny.
So I suffered through. And then there's another. So there's a couple in the front row.
Uh-huh.
This fucking ginger guy,
okay,
wearing glasses. With this girl wearing glasses. I don't think. Let me put it this way. Because I don't think they're regulars at any gym. I'll just put it that way. And they're in the front row. Literally the second I'm on stage, their arms are folded, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're folded the whole time.
Okay.
So I'm like, let me try to...
You think it's the glasses?
I'm like, let me crack open this coconut.
You're not a glasses comic?
Yeah. Glasses. If you're under 30 wearing glasses, this is not going to go well for you. So I go... So I'm probably like, hey, is this a date? And like, oh, it's a second date. And I'm like, oh, second date. Have you guys, you know, and he's like, no, they're not playing along. I said, look at you. Your arms are folded.
Yeah.
You're eating pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just loosen up, you know? Why don't you put your arm around him? I just, come on, everyone, come on, right, guys? And everyone's like, yeah. And he goes, okay. He puts his arm around her. I'm like, awesome, right? Put your arm around her. Yeah, now grab her titty.
Oh,
you
my
know?
God.
Which is just a silly thing to, you know.
He is probably petrified.
He removes his arm and she goes, and she says, I'm trying to think exactly what she says. She goes, wow, I didn't think I was going to get sexually harassed when I came here. I go, what are you going to do? You're going to contact the HR department at the comedy club, which doesn't exist?
Oh my God.
And then she says, I work in HR.
Oh no.
And so I said, you're a fucking snitch.
Oh my God.
Which is a funny line. Come on. Like, sure. Oh, you're a snitch. You're a goddamn snitch. Yeah. Look at you.
Also, for the record, HR does not protect employees. They are there to protect the corporation from getting sued.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
they are not on your side. Do not trust people who are working in HR. They are there working for the corporation. My buddy just had an entanglement with this psychotic HR person. It was nothing to do with sexual harassment, but the person had nothing to do, and they were spying on him. He borrowed headphones from someone's desk, and then they recorded him and tried to get him fired.
Recorded him borrowing the headphones?
Yeah. He was like, he plugged the headphones in because he needed to listen to something. They were working video editing.
So it wasn't his headphones, though?
They decided they had something against my buddy. And there was like a secret meeting. They reported him. Oh. And then they were like, come into our office. And they were like, apparently the person in HR said that you were stealing headphones. And he was like, what the fuck?
Wow.
So, you know, these are just employees at corporations.
Yeah.
They are Toby from The Office.
But, and when she said, when she said, I didn't come here to be sexually harassed, I thought it wasn't even like she was saying it as a joke, like, ha-ha.
No.
It was almost like, I was like, oh, I go, oh, I bet you think everything's sexual harassment. I bet you calling people like, I heard you said the N-words. Like, yeah, I told Shelly that she looked nice. Yeah, you can't tell a girl she looks nice. That's bad.
The N-word. That's very...
Right. I'm riffing.
Did you do that riff on stage?
I did that riff.
Oh, my God.
I think that's solid.
That's pretty funny.
So, they were not having it.
No. Well, I mean, you just... he's mad because he ain't getting any. Although, dude, don't have sex with an HR representative. What the fuck is wrong
with
you?
How would you even broach that? Like, excuse me.
Was she
me.
Hot?
Come on.
Okay.
Anyway, so, come on. Although, usually you find, I've found this a lot of times with these big corporations, the HR woman is like, she's almost like the real estate agent. Like,
right.
They're just like hot for no reason.
That's
like, why do you have to be that hot to be a real estate agent? And a lot of these HR women are like super attractive and they have like large breasts. And you're like, what are you doing? This is entrapment. There's something going on. I'm serious. Yeah. I've noticed that before.
Yeah.
I'm just observing things.
You've been working at a lot of companies with HR representatives?
Every time I meet some HR, I'm like, wow, you're like, I work at HR. I'm like, of course you do. And anyway, who knows? I've never luckily.
Or maybe it's the librarian effect for you, where you're like, it's the fact that it's a job that is not supposed to be. It's like the polar opposite.
Yeah.
Of sexuality that makes you notice the sexuality.
Yeah,
of the job.
I guess so. I feel like
it's like a taboo almost
for comics. The HR is Twitter. Twitter is the comedian HR in a way, right?
That's funny. Yeah.
But I did the only experience I ever had that was kind of HR related is
okay.
Back to doing this play I did with Matt Del Negro in 2003 or whatever. It was a play called Burning Blue. There are articles about it. You can Google Bill Dawes plus Burning Blue. There's an article called Naked Aggression on the front page of the Entertainment Section.
Naked
Post
Aggression?
About me getting fired
from the show. Get your Twitters
out,
folks.
With a lot of, this play was a big hit in the West End, came with a lot of hoopla.
Yeah.
but it was also like, recently after it was about gays in the military, and this is shortly after September 11th, so it wasn't the subject matter that people were dying to, like, who gave a shit at that point? Like, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was a big subject in 2000.
Yeah,
but 2003 not so much,
right?
So but my character was like, it was like one of those rare roles where I was like a supporting role, but I played like a hayseed from Arkansas, and I was just like, I talked, hey man, I had a cow named Bessie. We used to fuck this cow, but he was he was super charming and hilarious. It was a comic relief of this sort of
he
dark
fucked
play.
The cow, but he was charming about it.
He was charming about it, yeah. You know, because
like
he was,
the cow gave consent. That's how charming he was.
And I was like doing like I was like doing stunts on stage and all this shit.
Okay.
And it was like a great role.
Nice.
I was getting like the reviews. I was naked on stage.
You were naked.
I was fluffing.
Cock out.
I was full cock. Wow. Representing the Irish out there.
The peak
of
Broadway.
I had to fluff, you know, because I'm like, what, am I not going to fluff?
Go, you can fluff. I would have fluffed.
I have a nice fluff.
Who wouldn't have fluffed?
It was also in the middle of winter
in
New York City.
You
got to
fluff in winter.
Like, if otherwise.
I'd have fluffed in the summer. I respect you for fluffing in winter.
But also, like, you know, like, I got. You can't be naked on stage without fluffing just because. You got to represent sexuality.
Right.
You can't represent, like, an acorn.
No.
You got to represent, like, hey, this dick is ready for action.
You don't want to be looking like Statue of David up there.
You want a little bit of blood flow going on. Like, hey, who knows?
Yeah.
So I'm getting interrogated by...
Also, you know, ladies in the crowd.
Yeah. So I don't know if I've told the story before, but anyway, and this is actually what got me into comedy.
Really?
Because I was doing this play. I'm telling you, Tommy, I got the reviews of my fucking life.
Wow.
The New York Times said Bill Dawes is the best thing on a New York stage, right?
The New York Times?
New York Times.
Wow.
He goes, Bill Dawes is the best thing on New York stage this fall. And that includes fucking Broadway. So I'm like,
that is a hell of a clipping.
So like, people were coming, like all the big agents were coming to see me. I was like, oh, they were
seeing your dick.
Maybe it was to see my dick or just see my performance.
Right.
So
but they wanted to see the dick.
And I think that because I think this happens sometimes where you know that this is, could be like a breakout role for you.
Yeah.
And you know that people are coming to see you, that you kind of get like, you just want to make it better. You want it to be perfect. You want it to be everything.
Stop being able to get hard.
I never was hard.
Were you ever a little too hard?
A little flip flap.
Just flip flap. Okay.
Never too hard. So I, you know, just a little yank and flap.
Yeah.
A little yank and flap. So,
flick, flick.
There was a line, the playwright,
okay,
and whatever, I'll talk shit. His name's D.M.W. Greer. He was a...
D.M.W. Gertie?
Greer. Sure. He was a pilot, like a naval pilot,
yeah,
right? Which is it's a pimp-ass job. I think he was a pilot for helicopter or something. And he's very regimented, very, very, like, you know, by the book and very da-da-da. He'd done the play on the West End. It was a minor hit. And there was a line where I'm getting interrogated by the naval officer, and he's trying to find out if one of my people on the ship is gay.
Yeah.
And he goes, and so he's asking me these questions. He goes, do you know if you're, the line was as written, goes, have you ever seen your bunkmate engage in sexual activity with another man? And the line goes, well, he never copped my knob. And then he goes, have you ever slept with a member of the same sex, member of the Communist Party, or a small animal? Now, I told the story about fucking the cow.
Yeah.
So I take a beat. I go,
not a small animal.
I go, define small.
Oh, my God.
And he got a big laugh. That was
yeah,
the scene.
Yeah.
But it wasn't big enough, right? I knew that there was something in the way. This is before I ever did comedy, right? And I was always one of these guys who just did the lines as written. I'm doing the play with Chad Lowe. I don't know if you know Chad Lowe, Rob Lowe's brother. He's a TV actor. And TV actors tend to paraphrase a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So Chad Lowe is paraphrasing left, right, and center. You know what I mean? I mean, he was kind of the star of the show. And I was word perfect. And I just said, I think the line before defined small, I go, I feel like he never copped my knob is a weird, it's like a mixed metaphor or something. Like, you cop a feel.
Right.
Right? He never copped my knob. It just didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my character was always talking about food, and he was a sensualist. So I said, can I just try a different line?
Yeah.
One word. Can I say, well, he never gobbled my knob.
Yeah.
Gobbled is a funny word.
Gobbled?
Bill, no, trust me. It's good. It works. You're a good actor. It's great. Do it as is. All right. I kept doing it, and I would never get copped my knob, never get that big laugh. And I kept saying, David, can I try it? Can I try it? I kept bugging him. I finally said, okay, you can try it. Just try it one night. So I go out there. I go, you ever been with member? He's ever been with some? I go, well, he never gobbled my knob. Huge laugh. You ever been a member? Same sex, Communist Party, small man. Define small, fucking blew the fucking roof off.
Yeah.
So I get off stage like, fuck yes. I fucking knew it. I knew that there was like a pebble in the stream that was killing the flow of the punchline. And I fucking solved the problem. I was so excited, right? The next day, I get a phone call. I go, David, you saw that, right? He goes, put it back the way it was. David, you heard the reaction, man. It doesn't matter, Bill. Trust me. You're just an actor. I'm the playwright. He pulled that fucking card.
You're just an
just
actor.
Just do it as it is.
Oh,
it
that's
works.
Not the thing to tell
You're
Bill
a great
off.
Actor. You, yeah. Talk about counter-oppositional disorder.
You have no idea how going, I can fly.
I'm like, David, I've been doing it for like 3 weeks, and this fucking worked for the first time the way I knew it should.
Mm.
Trust me. Just you're good enough. Just put it back. I put it back, and I always had this fucking underlying resentment of like, just fucking respect me on stage. I'm changing one word in the whole play.
He's being petty as hell.
Of course, because he's a fucking by-the-book military guy.
That's so stupid.
So I never got it. And then there was a scene where I was...
ego. I mean, he should be able to admit if it gets a bigger laugh.
And by the way, and I've said this before, like, I worked on... When I was on Broadway with Tommy Kail, who directed Hamilton... This is the difference between someone like Tommy Kail, who's one of the most celebrated fucking, you know, Broadway directors.
Yes.
And now Hollywood directors and, you know. There was a monologue I had in Lombardi that Tommy said, hey, we got to cut this monologue. It's not telling the story. And I petitioned. I said, please, please, please. He goes, okay, well, pitch me on it. And I went home and I wrote a whole fucking pitch about why we needed it. He goes, fine, you convinced me, put it back in. I put that monologue back in. I did it for 3 months. After 3 months of doing that monologue, I was like, ah, fuck, he's right. It didn't help the story. It didn't really tell the story that needed to be told. It didn't help anything. But Tommy, to his credit, knew that it was something that I needed to get up every morning for this 9-month fucking run and tell this and have fun. So he gave it to me, you know, because it didn't make that much of a difference.
Yeah.
Maybe a different scene would have been marginally better. It was a funny kind of comic moment. And he let me have it just because he was like, I'm going to give this to Bill out of respect for him.
Yes.
Right? And this is a Broadway multi-million-dollar production, you know? And he did that. Now, here's his off-Broadway thing.
Yeah.
And he won't let me change one fucking word because of his fucking ego. And that's why he's fucking not doing shit.
Yep. And the off-Broadway people, they're insecure. That's what that
absolutely
screams to me. The fact that he won't let you have gobbled over copped, that's insecurity. And you know what? The other guy, it reminds me of like the great sports managers.
Yeah.
The great, like, even like the 76 Bulls. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Excuse me, 96, not 76.
I was about to say, you mean with Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, yeah, with it's Dennis like Rodman.
Dennis Rodman be Dennis Rodman.
He understood that sometimes to be the best manager, you have to let the players feel appreciated and express themselves.
Yeah.
And if you lock up the potential, then it's going to fuck up the chemistry of the team.
You got to
let everybody feel appreciated and understood.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what the greats do.
And I always find that the best directors and writers I've ever worked with are the ones who, I mean, they don't let the actors run roughshod because actors are idiots, but they listen and they'll go, try it.
Mm-hmm.
And he let me try, to his credit, he let me try it. But when it worked so fucking well that it got a massive applause break in the scene, he wasn't able, it just must have fucking hit him in such a weird way, his stupid fucking ego.
Yeah.
So anyway, the long short is I then, because it's about the HR story, so I was never dressed. I have to wear underwear in a lot of the shows. So I was like, I'm going to wear these American flag, like booty shorts, kind of like hot pants that I had when I was a go-go dancer. And I would take off, they're wearing like tidy whities. I'd take off, and it would get a laugh, right?
That's great.
It's a great thing. And then all of a sudden,
you were the gay character in the scene?
No, I'm straight.
Oh, interesting. But they thought you were gay because of all the quirks you were doing?
No, it was just like a fun. It was just like,
oh, it's because you're patriotic.
Yeah, you know, it was just silly. It was a silly thing. And then I'm told one night by the assistant stage manager who never liked me, I never liked her. The night after the show or before the show, she goes, oh yeah, don't wear the American flag pants underwear. Anyway, moved on, and I go, wait, what? Like, I didn't have any other underwear. They didn't dress me. They didn't give me options. So I'm going like, like until someone sits me down and explains to me what the issue is, I'm going to freeball it or I'm going to wear them. So that night or the next night, I go, and I can't find them. They're gone.
Oh, they took them?
They took them.
Did they replace them?
No. So I go, and I'm going like, and I'm changing. I'm looking. I go, hey. I forget. I go, Stacey, where's my, she goes, we told you not to wear those. I go, I don't have options. What am I, you know, like, what am I, I had like modern fucking whatever, boxer briefs. I go, I go, just give them to me. She goes, I'm not going to fucking, I go, I have a show to do. Just don't. She goes, oh, you go, you're not supposed to fucking wear them or something like that. And I said, and I'm in the dressing room with other actors there. I go, if you want to talk to me after the show, we can talk. But don't speak to me like that in the middle of the show. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
She goes, I'll say whatever the fuck I want. And she walks out of the dressing room. I'm fucking fuming. So I walk out and I go, listen. We can handle it. We'll figure it out. But seriously, don't. We can't fucking do this in the middle of the show. Talk to me after the show. This is fucking bullshit. And she said something like, fuck. She said, like, fuck you or something. And I had a Ricola mint in my mouth. I go, fuck you, cunt.
Oh,
and
no.
And I took the mint out and I threw it at her leg.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Oh, Bill.
I'm not proud of this moment.
Oh, God.
So after the show, we have like a note session.
Yeah. She's like, I got a note.
No, she didn't say anything.
Okay.
I go, Can we talk about what happened backstage to the main stage? She's assistant. I go, can we talk about? She's like, no, like we need to talk about. I want to talk about like what happened. She's like, no, we don't need to talk about. Okay. The next day, my agent calls me and says, you've been fired from the show. And I'm going like, what? And when you're like an actor in your 20s, this is your big fucking break. It's the end of the fucking world, right?
Yeah.
You think everything is like you'll never work again. Your reputation is mud.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I did definitely lose work because of it. So I called, why did you? Well, because, you know, I called the playwright. Well, you know, I told you, wear an American flag. It's disrespectful to the flag. I'm like, nobody told that to me. If someone had actually had that discussion with me, I would at least be like, okay, at least there's something I can kind of get. Do you have options? Can I wear a smiley face or anything, you know?
Yeah.
Because it was a funny laugh when everyone took off their pants.
Was it written in or did you improvise that?
Everyone takes their pants off at the same time. And it's like, tighty waist, tighty waist, tighty waist, like fucking something different, right?
Sure. It's rule of threes, baby.
Rule of threes. And you know, my ego obviously got in the way, because if my ego wasn't in the way, if I wasn't obsessed with me creating the most memorable comic role, I would have let it go.
Yeah.
But they already cut my fucking gobbled line, and I'm going...
Got to say cobbed, but it didn't get a laugh?
Because the thing is, like, I'm playing a hayseed from Arkansas, you don't aspirate your tea. You say, he never cupped my knob. You wouldn't say, he never cupped my knob.
Right.
Right, it's an aspirin. You never cop my knob. It feels. It's like what? It doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
Did you cop a feel? He copped a feel, but copped my knob. It just was a weird. Anyway, so
yeah. No, I hear you. Gobbled
is funny.
Gobbled is funny,
and it phonetically it flowed. So he told me that, and I was fired from the show, and I was like so fucking. I was so depressed, and I thought that. Meanwhile, this production had a lot of problems. Other people had been fired. The director was going through divorce on Ambien, and he was a fucking garbage human. So I was just depressed. I was like in bed just for days, just fucking like, what do I do? My career's over. And I was petitioning them. I said, please, like, my parents have made flight reservations. Can I come back the final weekend? So what happened is, and I'm telling you, I'm serious about this. After I got fired, all the people that were going to come see me, ICM, CAA, Innovative, all the big agents, all the people that were going to come see my performance at the time said this. They canceled the reservations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people stopped going. And then I said, let me come back that last weekend. So I came back. They let me do one or two shows that last weekend for my parents. I know my parents got to see my dick. That's fun. And then...
oh, my God.
And so there's a little bit of like, okay, cool, like... I got a little bit of, and then the play closed immediately after, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying if they didn't fire me, the play, it's possible that if I'd stayed, the play would have kept running. I'm just saying, it's just one of those rare things that it was a perfect role for me.
I mean, you did get the New York Times shout out.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they would let you go over...
Because I guess I thought that I was untouchable, because other people had been fired. We'd already opened. I'd got the best... Everyone's like, this play is not great. The best thing about every review is the best thing about this play is Bill Dawes. Watch him in this
fucking
play.
You let the ego...
And by the way...
You read your own headline.
I don't get those reviews. That's not my normal review. Right, you know what I mean? Usually it's like, Bill... Like, I just did this movie with Riz Ahmed, and like, you know, I'm like, he plays like a fucking... cookie cutter fucking racist. I'm like, oh great, that's my fucking review, great. So
damn.
But I had
you still read the reviews though.
Of course you gotta read the reviews, right?
And the same way you let it beef you up, you let it tear you down.
So I felt a little bit of redemption. I got to come back and the play closed.
Yeah,
right? Because I was like, well fuck you, the play closed anyways.
Well, they must
play.
Not have hated you too much, they let you come back.
Yeah, so there's a little, and I think the cast definitely came together and they petitioned, like, just give them a show or two.
Yeah.
And then other people got to come play my role. So it's like some people benefit, but that's fine. And I felt okay. And then that Monday, I get a call from my agent, goes, so Michael Riedel wants to do an expose on you getting fired from the show because you were like the toast of the off-Broadway community.
Wow.
And you got fired. So he's going to do an article about it. I go, what do I do? He goes, well, you know, I would just say no comment. So he calls me up. He goes, hey, I want to talk to you about, you know, getting fired from Burn. I go, look, I have no comment situation. He goes, okay. Then he calls him back. He goes, okay, I understand you're saying no comment, but But just so you know, the director had a lot of comments to make. I go, oh, yeah? He goes, yeah, the director said that the cast was unprofessional, that the cast was changing blocking and changing words against equity rules. First of all, fuck you. Against equity. Yeah. Oh, against the equity. Oh, boy, equity is going to come down on us. So, and he made some other comments like we were unprofessional, we wouldn't take notes, blah, 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 but just the whole cast in general, right? So I said, so, and I am somewhat proud of this. I go, man, what do I do here? Because I feel like I'm being pilloried. My name is going to be fucking mud. I've been fired. My off-Broadway career is over. My theater career is over. What can I do? So I did the fucking Statue of Liberty play. I go, well, I go, I don't know. I go, maybe the director should have focused more on creating a good working environment than coming out of my dick during notes. And he was like, what? I was like, oh, yeah. He would talk about the size of my dick during notes. He'd be like, yeah, your dick looked pretty big tonight, Bill. If you're fluffing, don't fluff that much. Look a little extra big tonight in front of everybody. So I'm telling him this. So I'm like, let's fucking see what happens with it. So sure enough, because you're going for clicks.
Yeah.
Even back then. And this guy's a salacious reporter. I mean, this is back when like you had like gossip reporters for theater. And the article came out called Naked Aggression, and it was
Naked Aggression.
And it was about me getting fired, but it was also about how the director, and then he went back to the director and said, Bill said you talk about his dick during group notes. Like I just said, like, it's good to make, you know, to make use of your assets, but he was going too far with it. Which is not a good comment for him to make. So then I had friends who were literally in theater who go like, oh, I read that that piece in the New York Post, because it was on the cover of with the big picture of me, an entertainment section. He goes, about you getting, I go, oh, you read the piece about me getting fired. I go, oh, you got fired?
Ha!
Perfect Statue of Liberty play. So it just fucking, you know. But the thing is, after I said the C word, they did an investigation to see if I had been sexually harassing females in the cast. So they said, did he ever say anything to make you feel uncomfortable? Was ever and luckily,
that's the big word. That's the big word. Don't be saying that shit.
Luckily,
that shit
I hadn't.
Yeah.
So no one could say anything.
Right. You know what I mean? Of course.
They weren't like, oh yeah, he would fucking talk about my butt or whatever. I didn't. None of that. You know,
clean as a whistle.
Nothing happened. It was clean. But they did the investigation, and then at one point, Dave was like, you know, we could be sued for sexual harassment. I go, how is that sexual harassment when someone tells
that's
me
true.
Says fuck you, and I say fuck you, cunt. I mean, granted, that is the fucking worst word,
right?
But
no, I hear
it's
you.
In the middle of a show.
You were
too.
Having a verbal battle,
and like when you're in the middle of a show, you're hyped up, you're ramped up, your adrenaline's going. And she like said that in front of all the fucking cast, and she wasn't fucking castigated at all. Anyway, but I thought, and then I
he's still mad about
I didn't
it.
Like move home. I didn't move home afterwards, but yeah. I kind of went home. I just remember like for like a week or something, just fucking doing walks with my mom, just miserable, thinking, what am I going to do? And then I lost. I was another play that they were interested in me for. I ended up losing because of the play they'd heard about me. But anyway, so I do solve the article. I had to click to. Anyway, but, you know, the HR thing is definitely tricky that way because a lot of things, and I do feel this way. It's not about your intention, obviously. It's about how people perceive what you said.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to give them, because if people perceive what you said as sexual harassment, then guess what? That's their point of view and that's valid. So you just can't fucking say anything. And particularly now, my God. I mean, can you imagine if I got in trouble with this woman at a comedy club? If she contacted the owner, like, he made me feel uncomfortable because he told my date to grab my boob. I'm like, ah, fuck. I guess that's where we are now.
Yeah, it's, that, I mean, that's one of those things that I would say is objectively sexual harassment in a work environment, right? But then in the context of the comedy, it's like, you're not really telling him to do that. You're saying that because it makes him uncomfortable in front of everyone else. So he's now the butt of the joke because he's now in a helpless, awkward position.
Also, the cognitive dissonance of going like, oh, put your arm around her. Come on. Yeah, it's nice. Right, oh, yeah, look, it's over. Awesome. Now grab her boob. Grab her titty. Grab her fucking titty. You know.
Sure.
It's just a funny
did
little...
Did he get a laugh in the room?
maybe a few people.
People didn't like it.
It was a tough room. I would just say that. It was one of the toughest rooms I've done for a while. And that golf stage, I was like, what the fuck happened? The next comic after me was like, Jesus, that crowd was fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
There is something that made
me
real.
Austin?
No, this is New York.
Oh, okay.
There was something that made me real after that. I was like, wow, there is a way of talking to this young crowd, the Gen Zoom crowd.
The young folks.
That you gotta, like, how do you relate to them in a way where you don't come across as a total fucking get off my lawn boomer?
Right.
You know? So, like, how can I relate to them? So I did like an old texting bit where I talk about women text too much. It's just a silly bit where I go, women text all the time. And the rule is whatever they text you, you got to text back. They can text you the dumbest thing. They can text you, I like cheese. You got to respond with something. You got to be like, yay, cheese. Go Gorgonzola or something stupid. Whatever it is. And then and then Chris D'Elia stole that joke. But anyway, so later on, And then I go, one time I was dating a girl, and she said, I'm going to go swimming at the beach. Smiley face. I didn't respond because I'm an adult. 45 minutes later, she texts me, why don't you respond to my swimming at the beach text? Frowny face. I responded, I didn't think I had to. Confused face. She texts me, next time I text you, just confirm you got it. Angry face. I text her, next time you go out swimming, go out farther. Shark fin, skeleton face, or whatever. You know, silly joke.
Right.
Trying to relate to the... To all these young girls who
you
are texting.
You did that joke at the New York show.
At the New York show.
After the
Because these girls were all like, blah, 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 in the back. So I said, oh, let me do something that will maybe resonate with this young crowd that's obsessed with that is on their phone as we speak.
Sure. They didn't like that.
I mean,
it ends with you wanting a girl dead.
Exactly.
Right.
So I don't know. So sometimes I go, man, am I just out of touch with what the kids want today? Is it something that I'm going to have to...
No, I don't think so. I think you can still write good jokes. You just got to change your targets.
And make the target me.
You can make the target you, or you can make the target... There's only certain things you can target.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much white men.
Right. Not necessarily white men. You just target power as a concept.
Yeah.
Like... Trying to think.
Well, I mean, I do the bit about how
you can target
corporations are evil.
Ex-bosses. That's a good one. Corporations are evil is evergreen. I've been rewatching a lot of old Carlin. Every like 2 to 4 years, I'm like, oh yeah, I used to love George Carlin. I wonder if his bits have aged badly.
Yeah.
And I rewatch him, and every time I'm like, damn, this dude is crushing. And just... In terms of, like, comedians who... Because, I mean, well, you were talking about the Dave Chappelle thing.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the new special, and I thought it was fucking bad.
I mean, well, yeah, it's definitely not his best...
It's just, like, some people don't have 6 hours.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Which is pretty much most people.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone, right? Yeah. He is a legend. He's one of the best to ever do it. Killing Him Softly... Probably my favorite special ever for a long time.
And the special before the closer I thought was great.
Sticks and Stones?
Yeah.
Even Sticks and Stones. We talked about it, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I had already was seeing the signs that he was running out of ideas.
Mm.
I felt like Sticks and Stones was a little... I was like, eh. But it was at least funny. It was at least full of jokes. And it was funny. But like this, the closer... I think half the issue is how it was marketed, right? The closer.
Yeah.
The final Dave Chappelle special.
The GOAT's final special.
He's wrapping it all up.
In a bow.
He's going to fucking blow our minds. And it was just like a fucking TED Talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was literally a Hannah Gadsby special for his audience.
But then what he would do is then every once in a while he'd come out with like a really hard-hitting, like old-school, like... flat-footed reverse, like ba-boom, that was pretty like whoa,
right? But the flat-footed reversals felt kind of
shallow. It felt meaner than usual.
Mean in the context of everything he was doing, it wasn't just like it was. They all kind of.
It also felt like it didn't. I don't feel like he needed. I guess the thing is, he had this trans friend who killed herself.
I think he was using friend like pretty generously.
Yeah.
He had a trans person he knew.
But he made a found... I mean, he made a foundation in her name and supporting her.
Well, that's good.
And he used the right pronouns, so it wasn't like he was like one of these Republican assholes. Like, I'm going to say he.
I don't think it was that offensive. I think all the people being like super offended by it, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
He wasn't really. I think he's a pretty standard viewpoint for a person in his, what is he, in his 50s now?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think it's that offensive. He's like, I don't have anything against a trans person. He did a couple hacky misgendering dog whistle bullshit jokes.
Like what?
He did a couple ones where he was like, I don't know. I don't remember.
I remember him misgendering. Because I think I would have been like, oh, dang.
He did it once or twice, but it in a way where he was like, it felt like he was adapting or like, oh, whoops. But obviously it's a rehearsed special. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And then in the end, he gendered her correctly or whatever.
And I do like the way he goes, you know, don't punch down on our people. He goes, she was my people. She was a comic. Quit punching down on my people.
Right.
And I think that is a fairly poignant, interesting thing to say right now in today's climate. Not a bad way to end it. I wasn't crazy about the special. I remember it wasn't cringy, but I remember a couple times like, really? Did you have to go that low with it?
It felt, ironically, for Dave Chappelle, half-baked. Can I say that?
as your generation, it felt lazy. I felt the jokes were lazy. But, you know, again, he has...
I still think he's one of the best to ever do it. And here's the other thing. He's making this documentary, this movie.
Yeah.
I've heard it's good, and I've heard that a lot of the bits that he does in the documentary are really funny.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why don't you just do the funny bits that we all know you can do versus... Like, he felt compelled to give this...
He wants to create this... And it's so funny because a year ago when he did the thing about George Floyd, he was, like, the man. He was a spokesperson for everyone disenfranchised. And his 8-minute and 46-second thing, you know, whatever. It was such a huge phenomenon. And so that he had such cultural cachet at that point for BLM and anyone else that it kind of, like, it resuscitated him from the backlash from Sticks and Stones. And I guess I felt like for the closer, I don't know why he had to go back. I understand he felt the need to talk about
this. This is like his third or fourth time going back.
Yeah, it felt a little like it didn't need to do that, but I guess
he really covered it.
But I felt like he needed to address the fact that, which is so weird that's lost in the fucking hubbub, the idea that this woman was bullied to the point of suicide on Twitter, which is... That's an interesting cultural issue to talk about because suicide rates since the pandemic, because of the rise, have gone through the fucking roof.
Right.
Suicide and depression. That's an interesting thing to discuss. Like, hey, you don't have to fucking do that because all she did as a trans woman was defend me, saying, hey, he's a good guy. He let me open for him and blah, blah, blah. And then she got fucking ran through the mud for that.
Right.
This is the thing, and this is going to, whatever. I mean, I'm not important enough to get canceled, but like, I have a daughter who is gay. I'm always listening to her. I would never misgender something. Even when I make fun of Caitlyn Jenner, I'm not going to misgender her. I blanch at the idea that it is a verboten topic to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk about it, even the joke where I go vegan food, like it's like the transgender food. I'm a soybean. Right. I identify as a buffalo wing. Like to me, that's not offensive.
I don't think that's offensive either.
But just saying the word as a white cisgendered male, I guess, is enough to make people... Anyway, so I try to be... But at the same time, I also feel like there's a weird thing. There's a collision between the feminist movement, which since Harvey Weinstein and Me Too and everything has been sort of elevated in a way that should be.
You're talking about the TERFs? I mean, that was like, the weird part when he was like, I'm a TERF.
Yeah. Because you're calling yourself trans exclusionary in that. So, yeah, he didn't have to say
that. But the TERF is considered by many to be a hate movement.
I know, but the thing...
It would be like, I'm for freedom for everyone except black people.
Okay, but let me say this. His bit where he says, Caitlyn Jenner won Woman of the Year her first year as a woman. That means she beat out all you Detroit bitches.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of funny.
It was kind of funny.
And the truth is, if you talk to enough women that are in their 30s,
mm-hmm.
a lot of women feel that way. A lot of women feel like, hey, as a woman, you get harassed, you get molested, you get raped, you have periods, you deal with childbirth, you deal with abortion, you deal with all this shit that men don't have to deal with. And here's someone who's been a privileged white man his entire life, never went through anything that a woman went through, and all of a sudden they're a woman and they're being celebrated as a woman. It's like, but you didn't have to go through the fuck. It's like,
oh yeah,
it's like
a, oh yeah, quote unquote, women in the 30s. That's how easy it is. That's how fucking easy it is. Oh, well, they haven't gone through anything as a transgender person. That
oh
might,
no, of course, of course,
that
of
might
course.
Exceed or surpass.
But that's not my point. But that's not
difficulty.
But my point is, and I don't think that you are excluding.
Oh, it's so
their,
easy to
listen.
Be a trans
I don't think
person.
You're
I'm so jealous of all these trans people.
Tommy, that's not my
lives.
Point. My point is, you don't have to say, "Hey, I am a woman," and with that means certain things. It means certain things I had to overcome and deal with. Not excluding trans people and their struggles that I deal with, but it's not the same struggle as someone who's been a woman their whole life.
It
I mean,
is different.
One out of
I
four
agree.
Women has been fucking raped or molested.
Oh, so look up the stats for trans people who have been murdered, molested, and committed suicide.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
The
yeah,
rates, I'm going to spoil it for you, they're a lot higher. They're a lot higher.
But
they're the highest.
I know, and you know, and the rates and the rates before they transition, after they transition for suicide are the same. So whatever that means, it's bad. But my point is, as a woman, to say, "Hey, I'm a woman, and I don't agree
mm-hmm.
that with the idea that quote unquote men give birth or a person with a uterus." Like, if you're a woman, you say, "Hey." No disrespect. I don't agree with that. I don't understand why that has become a form of hate speech. Why can't that just be opinion that you don't agree with? You can just say, I don't agree. I think that, because for how many thousands of years it's just been men v. women, and all of a sudden mm-hmm. they said, hey, there's a change in the fucking dynamic. We're, right. we're saying this. And if you say, actually, I think a woman is a thing, and I'm a mother, and I don't think that it is the same thing to say that I am, it's just anyone is a woman if they identify as a woman or whatever. I can see, like he said.
I hear you.
And so my point is this, and J.K. Rowling, for example, because I think she responded because Tampax said, for people who have menstruation, she's like, well, it's women. What are you talking about for people who have menstruation? Like, that was her point of view. Is it a little dated? Do I agree with it? No, I'm happy to say, who gives a shit if it's people?
I think the nitpicking of language by well-meaning people or corporations or whatever the fuck. I almost said well-meaning corporations, and I stopped myself because I don't believe that
oxymoron.
Exists.
Oxymoron.
Fuck a well-meaning corporation. But, and fuck a corporation pandering on that level to try and make money. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Fuck it. But whatever. I think the nitpicking of language of people who might, you know what I mean? The caution around saying the wrong thing is a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
The insane outrage on Twitter over like little slip ups is silly. But I also think that it's not that, maybe it is common among the fringes, you know what I mean? But I kind of tend to agree with, that they shouldn't, a tampon company shouldn't have to hyper-specify. But I think that we are in this strange time where there's a lot of new concepts being introduced, and it's just kind of going to be growing pains for a little bit.
And look, and I've talked to my daughter about this. My daughter's like, you know, I said, what do you feel about the idea that the BBC in their language has approved of 100 genders? And she was like, Dad, why do you care?
Yeah, I don't care.
And I kind of agree. I was like, well, why do I care? And you know, the Republicans always use the slippery slope argument. And a lot of times you go, you're using that fucking hacky slippery slope argument. But the truth is, the slippery slope argument is sometimes valid. I mean, look at the monuments. It's like, hey, Confederate monument. And then next thing you know, Washington's removed. Jefferson's removed. And I'm not even saying they shouldn't be removed, but we do slide down to the point where, like, we're going to get rid of any vestigial monument that represents our shady past. And there's a certain point, like, well, where does it stop? I mean, John Oliver, it stops somewhere, but it kind of is not stopping somewhere. So
where are you afraid that it will go? What are you afraid that will happen?
Well, I think that this is what I semi-feel. I feel that if the founding fathers are being regarded by the new generation of Americans as garbage human beings and, mm-hmm. and slave owners and slave traders and hypocrites and blah, 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 whether they are or not, it will it's kind of an underpinning for belief that America is just a shitty country. I mean, this professor came out.
You should rewatch a couple of George Carlin specials because he makes no bones about America being the most piece of shit country of all time.
I know, and I get that.
He hates the founding fathers,
and I feel that. But at the same time, like, the thing that I don't sort of buy, I'm never going to buy, is this idea that before these white evil fucks came along, mm-hmm. because white people are evil, and they came along and they subjugated the masses. Before then, it was just rainbows and butterflies and Indians changing fucking headdresses and people celebrating. I mean,
well,
this,
in some places it was,
but it also wasn't. Look
it
at the
wasn't
ancient
everywhere.
Mayans. Look at the Mayan Empire. I mean,
true.
Look at the sacrifice. They killed children and
there
fuck,
were
cut out
places
hearts.
That were fucked up doing fucked up things. But there were Indian tribes
any,
that were
any,
peaceful.
The Ottoman Empire, the Moors. The I mean, everybody from every race. Genghis Khan. They were fucking. They were raping and fucking and murdering. That was the history of civilization forever.
If your point is that the concept of human evil is not exclusive to the white race,
yes.
You are 100% correct.
But do you understand that there are black professors coming online, getting a lot of attention, saying that it is a white problem, and that when white people say it's human nature, that's what they say because they're racist, and black people before that, black and brown people, never did this. Mm. That came on the news this week, and I'm going like, well, that just shows a historical ignorance. You can't just say, and look, does power corrupt? And, you know, the idea that, like, okay, if black and brown people have power, would they be the same way? I think the answer is probably, for the most part, kinda.
Some. I do think power corrupts.
It's a thing that you can't prove, obviously. It's a negative.
Right.
You can't prove it.
You can point to other civilizations in, you know, places with brown people that have corrupt leaders and say, yeah, see. You know, there's corrupt leaders in South America. There's corrupt leaders in Asia. There's corrupt leaders in Africa.
And even what's going on in China right now. So
there's crazy corrupt leaders here, right here in the United States of America. It is not necessarily a racial thing. It is maybe a human thing.
I will say this. I do think that
in America,
I love fucking this goddamn country, right? And I like.
See, there's your problem. You're biased. You're biased because of you've been indoctrinated with patriotism.
But I mean,
I have
not too. Like not in a huge way, not in like a problematic way. But even on the plane right here, I watched Black Hawk Down, right? Mm-hmm. And after Vietnam, and even during Vietnam, you know, there were rules of engagement, and they became much more specific after Vietnam because of all the atrocities that were committed by American troops. And
Vietnam, by the way, not to cut you off. An excellent example of the slippery slope theory being completely untrue. Continue.
Of course. I get that. So, I get that. So, and I'm not saying, obviously, there are huge mistakes in Iraq. There's tons of...
Well, the whole world is communist now because we lost the Vietnam War.
Yeah. So, I do feel that, like, when you look at this, and Graham, maybe there's something a little jingoistic about this movie, mm-hmm. but there is a code of ethics in general, mm-hmm. that is instilled in American military. Don't kill civilians.
Mm-hmm.
Bring home your guys.
Yes.
Do as little damage, as kill as little people as possible to protect your assets or whatever it is.
Yes.
That they take very, very seriously. And it's embedded in most countries,
mm-hmm.
in the Middle East and elsewhere. They don't honor that at all.
Right.
I mean, they put their weapons in churches and preschools and shit like that. That's not a myth.
I hear you. And you are right about that to an extent. But this is also the propaganda that we have been fed since the time that we were little kids. That the United States military are the good guys and that we're a little bit different. And that we don't kill civilians. And then you look at the truth of it. And, oh, well, we did torture hundreds of innocent people at Guantanamo Bay.
Sure. But also
Obama
at the same time,
killed more innocent civilians with drone strikes
yes.
than any other president. You know what I mean? And he's our guy.
But at the same time, I go back to the whole South Park thing and Team America.
We firebombed fucking like, Tokyo.
And I for some reason, I think it's...
Two atomic bombs full of civilians.
I know.
No, it's okay. We don't do that. We're America. Right.
But I do think that, and like I said, obviously they're awful atrocities. I think there is a belief system in the value of human life that is embedded in how it's embedded there. We fuck it up. We don't always honor it. But it's same thing with the Declaration of Independence. In that our inalienable human rights that apply to all races, we have not always honored it. But it is a good framework to say, hey, we're getting better and we're trying.
Yes.
And we set up a constitution that allows us to try to be better. And yeah, we fucked up. But if you can look at any goddamn country in the world that didn't fuck up and their ascent to power, then fucking tell me about it.
A lot of people are fucked up. But you gotta forgive me because I've literally just been binge watching George Carlin specials, so I'm fully like in anti-America mode.
Yeah, because in his thing is very like anti-capitalism. How capitalism, it's just like absolute power corrupts. Absolutely,
yes.
I get it. And but you
it's
go
a big club, folks, and you ain't in it. It's and called the American Dream because you have to be asleep to believe it. Oh, he's so good.
Great line. but then you go back, but like this idea that. There aren't just indiscriminate fucking assholes who want the destruction of Western democracy and democracy in general that will, by hook or by crook, try to make it happen, like in 9/11 or anything like that. And you can say, well, 9/11 was justified, whatever the fuck it is. Or it's inside job.
No. I don't think 9/11 was justified.
But at the same time, you got to like look at the fact that fuck, I lost my train of thought. But so the Team America thing is... They're dicks, pussies, and assholes, right?
Right.
And the assholes will just shit on everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you need a dick to fuck an asshole.
Right.
Because if your dick doesn't fuck an asshole, the asshole's just going to shit on everyone. It's going to be a fucking disaster. And that is true. There are nihilistic, entropic fucking forces that are out for massive destruction, and they exist today. They exist all over the fucking world.
I'll say, as a biased American, that after World War II, the United States put our little military bases all over every single country in the world, and ever since, there has been no major global conflicts, and that is directly a cause and effect of the United States basically pointing our massive gun at everyone and saying, behave.
Yeah.
Now, I would rather the United States be holding that massive gun because I am an American.
Yeah.
And if we just pulled all of our forces back and said zero military spending, that power vacuum would immediately be filled by other people who don't have us as Americans' best interest in mind.
And you realize that's a Republican talking point. You know that,
well,
right?
Well, that's just the facts as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
And I think anyone in denial of that is being completely naive.
And that kind of ties into the cops in fucking America, too. You remove all the cops, they're going to be...
Don't try and extrapolate it too much to other things.
Okay.
I will say, with this amount of power, we have abused it and taken crazy advantage of a lot of countries. And like George Carlin's bit about bombing brown people is our favorite fucking hobby. Meanwhile, we have so many problems here.
Yeah.
That we don't do shit about is 100% accurate.
I think we are
an evil force... In many ways.
Sure.
On a global scale.
I will also say
this. It benefits us, so I benefit from us, and I think that certain things, global conflicts, have been avoided because of our presence, but we've also caused a lot of harm at the same time.
Yes, and I will also say this. God damn, I keep losing my fucking train of thought. Well, let's look at Taiwan, for example, right?
Okay.
Like, I have friends from Taiwan, and that's scary as fuck to them, that their country can be annexed by a totalitarian regime, which China is an authoritarian regime.
Well, it kind of already has been annexed, unfortunately.
Yeah. But there is an
independence. Depending on who you ask.
Yeah. But anyone in Taiwan will say no one in Taiwan wants to be they don't want to lose all the rights to China and perhaps be put in fucking re-education camps like the Uyghurs and all that. They consider it. And the idea that America could let that happen is scary to them. And America is their one thing that gives them hope that they won't have to. I mean, even if you look at.
Well, let me just say something about America. Never, ever, ever trust America to do the right thing.
Yeah. But here's another thing I was going to say, Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
Because of.
Look at how we treated the fucking Iraqi translators.
Sure.
That's everything you need to know about.
The Mauritanian, yeah.
If we'll step in on your behalf because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, but that's also. But then we're talking about Afghanistan.
Oh,
now,
but
right?
It's complicated. Oh, I meant Afghanistan. The Afghanis, okay. Yes.
So, but that's also a thing like
Iraq too, probably.
Yeah, but then you hear all these stories of soldiers that did everything in their power against the U.S. government to get these soldiers out.
Oh, I'm not
and
mad
the
at the
U.S. government right now is working on a very leftist ideology, which is like, hey. Let's not oppress these people. Let's get the fuck out of there. It's not our fucking war.
Which I agree with.
Which you agree with. But now what's happening in Afghanistan is fucking atrocious. I mean,
it is.
You're following what's happening. So we're supposed to be okay with that now?
But that is just a inevitable result of going in there in the first place.
Yes.
Which was a right-wing policy.
Sure. It's possible that...
I do think we could have maybe figured out a better way to... help out the people who helped us out like we promised to do, but at the end of the day it's been what 20 years we had to get out of there,
and there's argument that like if we'd kept a skeleton base there of 2,500 troops and just like we have in Korea, like we have in all these other countries, like would have that have been enough to kind of have like at least a status quo? I mean the problem is we're not going to know really the effects of it until later,
right?
We're not going to know until we start hearing more and more atrocities until there are terrorist attacks that are sort of like promulgated in that area that come overseas and come to different countries. And then all of a sudden we're going to be like, oh, we should, you know, who knows? It's sort of like Monday morning quarterbacking the situation.
Right.
Like,
it
no
is.
One fucking knows. It's possible that they will sort of resort to a situation that is going to be one that is nearly sans human rights, sans women's right, and we're going to let it exist that way and just ignore and pretend it didn't happen.
It happens in North Korea already.
Yeah.
And a lot of other places.
Absolutely.
Should we? I mean, some people would argue, let's go to every single country where bad things are happening and solve it. I would say, hey, look in the mirror, bucko.
For sure. But to
look at
to
the homeless
say,
issue right here in this
course,
city.
Of course. But the two aren't mutually exclusive either.
No,
to say
right?
that to say that if America withdrew all their interests overseas and withdrew all their troops from all their bases overseas, that we would have somehow a more utopic world is, I think it's just naive. I just don't buy it because I think there are too many fucking assholes who are nihilistic who want fucking bad
I don't think
bad
it would
intentions.
Be a more utopic world, but I do think that... it's like our military budget is so out fucking rageous compared to the amount of stuff and the amount of problems that we have. It just makes me mad.
Yeah,
it just makes me mad at the U.S. government and the owners of this country, and that they just don't give a shit. And they're not Americans. They don't care about us. Everyday citizens, we are not Americans to them.
So
we are workers. We are pawns.
I agree. I mean, to think that like, and this is where I kind of like.
Real America is the 10 billionaires who make all the decisions.
And the truth is, if those 10 billionaires gave up half of their money, we could buy the Amazon rainforest and protect it for fucking ever. We could fucking buy Haiti and build Haiti back up. We could do so much great fucking work.
True.
So I do when Biden talks about, I want to pay for this infrastructure by taxing the 1% of the 1%. Like, yeah.
How could anyone argue with that? Which, by the way, they're not going to do it.
They
took the Build Back Better shit out of the bill.
They did?
Mm-hmm. Biden's fucking useless. He's a coward, and I hate him.
Yeah.
He sucks.
So what's going to happen with him?
I don't know. Maybe he'll fucking die or some shit. I really don't want another Republican in office, but God help us. It's like... the government is useless.
And I try to address this in my stand-up because it's like I like the liberal values that I feel are real liberal values, the most important liberal values, which are women's rights, pro-choice rights, equality of pay, anti-racist policies for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Gay rights, gay marriage, all that stuff, legalization of weed at the fucking top of the goddamn list. But I also feel like you can be liberal who can also say, hey, stop. Hey, shut up.
Sure.
Like, that doesn't exist in the big tent Democratic Party. If someone's like, hey, okay, yeah, yeah, also shut up. Just shut the fuck up. Just for a second, shut the fuck up. We get it. We get it. Now shut up.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I tend to think a tiny bit conspiratorially in terms of, like, all the stuff that the media blows up. Like, even these, like, I want these transgender issues to be addressed, mm-hmm. but is this what every single person in the country is dealing with on a day-to-day basis? It's really not.
But we don't know.
Are they
that.
Teaching critical race theory in schools? They're really fucking not. You know what I mean?
It's I don't know enough about that.
Shit peaks up in the news for 2 months, and then the news moves on, and the country
outrage.
Moves on.
It's all fake outrage. But it's fake outrage until you have a daughter or a son at one of these schools where this happens. And granted, it's anecdotal at times, but if you are the parent of a child and you hear this shit, it can be a little fuck. I could understand. Look, I saw this.
Talk to your fucking kid.
I completely agree. But there's also this idea that the public schools know better than parents about how to educate their children. It's also a little bit, well, is that what we believe now?
I mean, have you met the American public?
But have you met the fucking public school system? I mean, Jesus Christ.
It's fucking bad.
It's fucking bad. You know
it's
what?
A product of the American
amount
public.
Of rapes and molestation that happen in public schools compared to the Catholic Church, it dwarfs the Catholic Church by like a factor of 100 times.
You're talking about colleges?
I'm talking about high schools and middle schools. The amount of rapes and molestations and assaults happen, they get covered up because of law firms that are hired to cover up assaults to protect the interests of public schools.
A lot of band teachers.
Yeah, and gym teachers. And just a lot of, and obviously the government has a vested interest.
I got to pee soon, by the way. How long is this episode? I got to go back to work.
All right, fuck it. We covered a lot. I fucking, you know, whatever I said. But anyway, I'm trying to, it's just weird to have a nuanced point of view is my point.
I don't think it is. I think everybody has a nuanced point of view. It's just
but
you go on Twitter and there's no new. Yeah, that's true. People are afraid to
say it.
All
right, let me just say this before you go, Tommy, before you have to pee.
I think behind closed doors, everybody has a nuanced point of view and everybody is a little bit more reasonable than they're given credit for. And
so,
I wish that was more allowed.
I asked a friend of mine. She's a doctor in New York. Who lives next to the stand. I asked her to come to a show, and she said she's a doctor. Mm-hmm. She is actually contracted by the CDC. Mm. I said, hey, you want to go to the show? She goes, do they have vax cards? And I said, yeah, you need to be vaccinated. She goes, no. And then she actually brought up, she goes, do you think you can get me a vax card, like a fake vax? And I was kind of like, just get the fucking vaccine. I mean, I get it. And then she said,
she doesn't have a vax card.
She doesn't, and she's a doctor, and she says there's a problem not allowing scientific dissent at all today. It's like the virus of woke wants comedy to be like the jokes they tell Bible school. And I said, I know you got the vaccine because you were forced to, but there's studies coming out showing that vaccinated transmit just as much as unvaccinated. They have similar viral loads, but we're still mandating the vaccine, not recognizing natural immunity at all, and just shoving more and more shots into arms. The immunocompromised in this country are now on their fourth booster, and we're not even this year. There's also a virus of mental craziness and madness, a psychosis. I don't even know. I can't even talk to any of my liberal friends anymore about it.
So she's a Republican.
But she's not, because she's always been a liberal. But I think it's just like...
So she's saying she's a liberal who can't talk to her liberal friends?
She's a liberal who has this idea that the vaccine, there shouldn't be a vaccine. And, you know, she goes, these people are such morons, they think the variants are homegrown.
Is she like
US.
One of these crystal ladies?
No. She's like she was a doctor for 15 years. She goes, he goes, do you know how many? He goes, the variants are homegrown, because that's the idea. All these variants are coming because of the plague of the unvaccinated. He goes, do you know how many people in low-income countries are vaccinated? Less than 1%.
Yeah.
Delta came from India. Do you know where Lambda and Mu came from? South America. But we put the blame on the vaccinated, on the unvaccinated in a privileged nation when the vaccines are doing so fucking well, they're already admitting fourth doses. It's ironic. And Big Pharma is focused on boosters for rich countries because they're getting more money. Meanwhile, variants are forming in all these other countries that don't even have access to vaccines, including those at highest risk. Israel and NIH are currently running $2 million studies on why women are experiencing menstrual changes after getting the vaccine, and they don't have an answer for it. And we're still mandated. And he goes, there are menopausal women who are bleeding now. Have you ever heard about that after the flu shot? So, hey.
Yep.
You know.
I mean.
That's a doctor who works with the CDC who is currently telling me this shit on the fucking Super DL.
Yeah. Well.
Because she's terrified she's being watched.
I got the vax.
Okay. We all did.
We all got it. So.
Yay, vaccination.
We might all die, but.
Anyway, guys. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Time has to pee.
Yep. I got to
pee. Talk to you soon.